Hola, hola. Welcome to Mundo Albiceleste's second podcast and a happy edition, I might say, after Argentina won 4-0 against Venezuela with Diego making his debut as an official national team manager at home. So I'm with John, as always, in Malaysia.
Hi, guys, and a big welcome to everybody to our second episode. And it was a great weekend for myself when... to make things more interesting, in our second episode, we have a couple of new guys here. And I would like to introduce Roy from Montreal, Canada. Roy?
Hey guys, how are you? And thanks for having me. It was an excellent podcast, the first one, and I'm glad I'm part of it.
So, Roy, you're in Montreal, Canada, but let us know a little bit more about your history and how you became an Argentina supporter.
Yeah, I've lived in Canada for 18 years. Originally, I lived in Ottawa for 16. I recently moved to Montreal about 2 years ago. And I guess the way I started supporting Argentina was in the 94 World Cup. It was the first real World Cup where, you know, I could... I kind of know what's going on. I kind of know what football is and everything. So my dad is obviously a lot older than I am, and he's a Bill supporter. And he grew up about everything. So, you know, he's obviously a Brazil fan. My brother's an Argentina fan. Now, as a kid, I didn't know growing up in Canada that, you know, if you love one, you hate the other. So I grew up supporting a bit of both. Always leaned towards my brother's side, towards Argentina. And when they got eliminated in 94, I was like, oh, okay, you know, this isn't too good. And then Brazil won the World Cup, and I was like, okay, well, at least my dad is happy. But 98, when he came around, I was an Argentine fan through and through. And I guess the rest is history, as they say.
Nice. And first of all, let me apologize if the quality is not quite up to a high standard. I mean, the quality, the sound quality. Of course, we are in a conference call with people from all over the world. So to expand our frontiers a little bit more, I'll introduce Dave, and he's in the USA right now. Tell us exactly where are you, Dave, and welcome to the Mundo Albiceleste's podcast.
Hey guys, happy to be here. Definitely, the first podcast was excellent, and I'm glad to be a part of the second one. I'm from Albany, New York, which is around the central part of New York here in the United States.
And why are you following Argentina instead of the New York Yankees or the New York Mets or the Giants or Jets?
Well, actually, I've always played soccer since I was a kid. My dad was a big soccer player, football player, when he was young, and that just transcended onto me. And I played since I was five, and I've always been following the international game because my father followed the international game. And I just enjoyed watching the way Argentina played, and I just loved the style of play and the atmosphere and the way that they were taught to play the game. So I've always been following them.
Okay, so which position do you play? Because Roy is a goalkeeper, and I don't know about John. I could be the number 10 because I don't run that much. I could be the lazy one.
I'm a left winger, Seba.
Left winger, that's all right. And what about you, Dave?
I play a left striker. I'm up top.
Oh, you have competition for places with John, I think. But okay. if Diego is the manager, I'm confident he'll put all of you, and he's not shy when it comes to strikers and forwards. So let's talk about the game against Venezuela. Of course, we discussed some during the game in our chat room. And also afterwards with the player ratings from Dave, excellent as always, I might add. And what about the game, guys? How did you see? Were you surprised at how good Argentina played after we scored? Or I know some of you had some doubts whether the three little guys up front would work, but against Venezuela, they did work.
I guess by some of you, you mean me, because I was really against it. And I still am. I mean, I don't mind using the three little midgets up front, but only if it's, you know, quote-unquote, easier teams. I mean, if we're facing a tactical team like Germany or Italy, and even now England with Capello, I'd rather not play three little guys up front. I'd always prefer to have Messi there, and Aguero has a long way to go, so maybe Diego Milito or Lisandro Lopez, and either Tevez off the bench, depending on the formation. If it's a 4-4-2, Tevez will come off the bench. If it's a 4-3-3, Tevez on the left. But like I said, I mean, against Bolivia, hopefully it's not a 4-3-4-3, and thank God it's looking like it's going to be a 4-4-2. So it's going to be interesting to see who's going to be on that. We don't test.
I know. John voted no when I asked that question in our poll about the three little guys up front. So, what do you think after the game, John?
Well, I guess it was the result was kind of expected. Based on the statistic that Roy provided to us, we were expected to win, not just win, but dominate and win. And so, to me, it wasn't a surprise. And I believe that if it was in any other formation or any other personnel on the starting 11, we would have achieved the same result.
What about you, Dave?
Well, on the same lines there, Venezuela definitely isn't as commanding as a team as Brazil or, say, even Paraguay and Uruguay, the way they're playing at Uruguay, the way they're playing now. But it definitely worked, as we saw, and I really like the way Tevez and Messi and Aguero all moved together, even though Aguero was not, I didn't like the performances of Aguero, as he didn't score as many times as he had the chances to, and seeing like Messi and Tevez really shine out the top three up there.
Well, you all know, and if you're a regular reader of Mundo Albiceleste, you know I am a big fan of Diego Milito. But I have to say, Diego was right after the game in a press conference. By Diego, I mean Maradona, the only one right. Diego, not Milito. I will say Milito when I refer to the striker of Genoa. I think Diego was right, and after the game he said, I want to hear from those who said we need to play with a big target man up front and send crosses. And he said, not all the time you have to send crosses. And you can score without having to send crosses all the time. You can play the through ball like in the first goal. But at the same time, if you look closely, two of our goals came with crosses from the right side. Messi crossing for Tevez, Agüero crossing for Maxi. So, if you remember in the first half, Messi sent a cross from the right and Tevez couldn't quite connect with the head. So I think Diego is right, because with the kind of players you have, and when you can rely on their speed and their trickery, You don't necessarily need to play a system where all you can do is send crosses, like many boring national teams around. I think that's something that could make of Argentina quite an exciting team to watch. And it proved, at least on Saturday, that it was quite effective as well. What is your take on that, John?
Well, I don't really look at Argentina as a team that relies a lot on crosses. Even when Batigol was there, they never were relying on crosses. It was always the keeping the ball on the ground, short, good, beautiful passing, fast-paced game. So I guess Diego was right in that sense. But can you imagine if we are playing against, with a team that has a bigger and taller centre-back, especially like England, with the likes of John Terry there? I guess maybe in a certain way we do need some crosses coming in and allow our more physical, strong and tall center forwards to head the ball in.
Let us agree in disagreeing with that. I mean, when you play, and this was quite obvious when we lost to Germany in 2006, they had these two big, tall center backs in Mertaka and Etelda. And I think the best way for us to break them down would have been to play the ball on the ground, not send crosses. And the same happened with England in 2002. We played the game they wanted us to play. We kept sending crosses for Sol Campbell to clear. And I think especially when you play against big, tall center backs and big opposition. That's exactly where you have to play the ball on the ground with the little guys, if you know what I mean. It's another matter on defense, that goes without saying, but then on defense it's not that we have the same problem. We have some tall guys down there. Let's talk a little bit about some players in particular, and I have to say it must be very difficult for a young guy to hear from Maradona say the words, okay, this is the number 10 shirt, use it and it's yours from now on. But Leo Messi, he put on a show, right? What's your call on that, Dave? It must be very difficult for a young guy to hear from Maradona say the words, okay, this is the number 10 shirt, use it and it's yours from now on. But Leo Messi, he put on a show, right? What's your call on that, Dave?
I mean, I was surprised to see Messi. Well, I wasn't really too surprised to see him wearing it because you knew it was either going to be him or, I guess, Maradona was hinting at maybe Montenegro before the game, but that wasn't going to happen. But, Messi truly put on a show wearing number 10. And I feel like there's so much pressure put on that number, especially with Albi Celeste. But Messi, he's always so humble whenever he's post-game interviews, talking about, you know, I don't want to be the next Maradona. I just want to be me. I just want to be Messi. I think he did a really good job wearing the number 10.
I was going to say, well, Messi usually takes pressure very easily. I mean, when he was with Barcelona, he made his debut at, 17, 18, and he did fantastically well in Argentina in the under-20s in 2005. You know, he did even better. And now in Barcelona, once Ronaldinho left, he got given the number 10, and we know what kind of player he's become over there, and he's right now, in my opinion, and I think we could all agree on this, by far the best player in the world right now. And it was the perfect time to give him the number 10, because if you don't give it now, then it might be, you know, a bit too late in a few years.
Yeah, and FIFA's World Player of the Year winner, Cristiano Ronaldo, might very well miss out on the next World Cup because his Portugal side is not doing quite well, and he's failing to provide the goods at international level, and not having a good season for Man United as an individual, not as a team. I mean, the team is playing quite well and doing well in a number of tournaments, but he's not the same. He's not playing in the same level he did last year. So if this FIFA World Player of the Year award is not going to Messi, I'll be very, very disappointed and very, very upset at FIFA.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that it will be Messi, and that's the difference between Messi and Ronaldo. Messi succeeds, well, so far he succeeded wherever he's went, and he succeeds with the national team. And if you look at Ronaldo's record with Portugal, it's clearly not the same as with Manchester United. And that's how I think you could separate Messi and Ronaldo. Messi shows up for the big games. Between the two, Messi has always done a lot better. And I can't imagine Ronaldo in the situation that Messi's in right now with Barcelona. I think Ronaldo wouldn't be doing too well, you know? And that's just my opinion. I don't know what you guys think about it. Personally, I'd love to hear what John has to say about that.
Let me ask John in Malaysia, what was the reaction of the game in your country, and if you have information of the reaction in other countries in the region? We know there are a lot of supporters in Asia, and I wanted to ask you so you could give us your view on how the national team is being covered by the media and being followed by the fans in general.
Well, as I mentioned before, you know, I mean, here, probably out of 10 football fans, if you can find on the street, 8 of them will tell you that they support England and they were looking forward to watch England play Slovakia. You might find an odd one of you odd supporters like me who support Argentina. But having said that, you know, there is a good coverage on the Argentina national team these days, simply because right now with the variety of cable TVs and satellite TVs that we have here, there is a lot of focus on La Liga and Italian Serie A. So a lot of young kids are following these leagues, and they begin to learn players like Lionel Messi, Aguero, and players like that. Furthermore, with the likes of Carlos Tevez and Mascherano doing so well in the English Premier League, a lot of fans who follow the EPL so religiously are beginning to fall in love with Argentina football. So there is a growing number of supporters here who are supporting Argentina, and which I think is great, because I remember like in 2002 World Cup, when we went to this place to watch England-Argentina, there was like three of us, and the other 50 people in the shop were all England supporters. But I don't see that's going to be a problem nowadays.
Are you sure you were in Malaysia and not in a London pub? Other than that, what was the reaction for this game in particular? I mean, are they covering a little more about Argentina because of Diego? Are they saying that Argentina is looking favorite to qualify or a potential World Cup contender?
Well, the coverage is still not as big as it is on the England national team. But then again, you know, they still do cover most of the key points there. Like, for instance, they do recognize that the pool of talents that the Argentina national team has, they do recognize that this is a team that needs to be considered as one of the favorites in South Africa. And they also know that it's not like they do not know who Diego Maradona is. They know him very well, his history, whether it is the good, bad or worse. And some of the football experts that have came out and spoke about Maradona's appointment are pretty much in favor of his appointment. They do look at it as a positive move by the AFA, you know, to bring the glory days back to the Argentina national team.
And what about Diego's crowd control? When people started turning their back against Verón, and they were jeering Verón every time he was on the ball, and you could hear the whistles, and all of a sudden Diego asked the people to start applauding Verón instead of whistling, and the people reacted. I mean, I've never seen something like that. You follow American sports, I take it, Dave. Did you ever see anything like that in any sport?
That's truly special when Maradona turned around and controlled everybody in the stadium pretty much with just what he was doing. I haven't seen anything like that by a coach or a manager in any American sport here. I've seen players do it to the fans, which all players do that. But to be able to control everybody at once, just like Maradona did, that was amazing. I've never seen anything like that.
That must give the players tons of confidence, right? I mean, even when they're not performing quite well, or take for example the situation with Carrizo, and you as a keeper, Roy, you know how difficult it is for you to be sitting on the bench. Your fitness, your match fitness is not quite at the top, and then you have the complete confidence and the trust of your national team manager, and he says, you're my number one keeper, so I'm going to pick you for every game. And then add to that when your team is attacking most of the game, the keeper is only going to be called into action a couple of times in a game. And Carrizo responded, and he responded quite well.
I think that's the best thing for a goalkeeper. If a coach, if your national team coach, who happens to be, you know, in my opinion, the greatest player of all time, tells you personally, he's like, you know what, I know you're not getting the minutes you're playing, but you're my number one. Go out there and prove me right. That, for me, as a goalkeeper, is the best thing in the world. Because confidence, if you don't have confidence, especially for a goalkeeper, it's a show. And you know what? It's going to rub off on the other players. Could you imagine if Carrizo made a bad move? All the defenders would have been like, oh my God, you know, Carrizo's not doing very well. We have to track back a lot more. We have to defend. And it could really change the game up a bit. So as a goalkeeper, yes, confidence is the best thing in the world. It doesn't matter if you haven't played in a year, 2 years, a month, 2 weeks. It doesn't matter. If a coach shows confidence in you, that's it. You have to do or die. I know. I can imagine how it is for a striker as well. So,
let's move ahead a little bit. There's another game coming up, and after the game with Venezuela, where we had nine players coming to that game with a yellow card and the possibility of being suspended for the game against Bolivia. Well, we had only one casualty, which is good news on one hand when you had nine players risking suspension and only one got suspended. I'm talking about Jonas Gutierrez, and that's one player we're really going to miss in Bolivia. And Diego said after the game that his ideal of a midfield would be playing Jonas Gutierrez and Maxi Rodriguez on the wings, Gago and Mascherano in the middle of the park. But now he's going to have to make do without Jonas Gutierrez. And what will be, in your opinion, John, the ideal replacement for him? And now we're already talking about the build-up for the game against Bolivia. What will be the ideal replacement for Jonas on the left of our midfield against Bolivia, John?
Well, for me personally, I would like to see Angel Di Maria being put on the left. But I'm not so sure how is that going to work, because from what I've seen, Jonas Gutierrez's contribution so far, it is magnificent. You know, finally we have someone on the left after quite some time. We miss players like Juan Pablo Sorin, and here we have someone who can play on the left so well. So I'm not so sure how is this going to change the effect of the team performance on the field. But let's just give a little bit of confidence to Di Maria. Who knows, he might put on a great show for us.
Dave, the talk is it's either Di Maria, as John said, or Lucho González. What would be your pick for this particular game to replace Jonas?
Easily I'd go with Di Maria, just because of his pace, his youth, his electricity on the ball. When he came in the game against Venezuela, he was in for about 20 minutes, and he created chances for himself, and he even showed some of his skills. Compared to Lucho, I don't know if Lucho has the pace to play out there on the wing. And we've all seen Lucho try and try and try to perform well for the national team, and he hasn't come up yet. I say give the young guy the chance, even though his defensive tracking back skills probably aren't up to snuff compared to Lucho Gonzalez. But Di Maria definitely has the youth, and he can give him a shot against Bolivia, especially because they're not as strong as the top teams in the qualifying table.
What's your call, Roy?
I agree with Dave. Go with the young kid. Against Bolivia, you're gonna need all running all the head and all the electricity from a player like Tevez will bring. And if you have someone like Di Maria as well who brings that, you know what? You're gonna need that. You're gonna need the speed, especially at wings. No, he's not a Gutierrez. Gutierrez runs up and down the field, tracks back, defense, sometimes even acts as another left back, and that's great. But for me, we need to go for the 3 points against Bolivia. 1 point is not the end of the world, but it'd be a lot better if we go for three. And Di Maria right now, on form, maybe he's not as good as Lucho Gonzalez, but I think right now he has a lot more to offer. I'm not sure what you think, Seba, but for me, it's Di Maria.
Okay, I'm gonna disagree a little bit with you. But first, the most important thing is that I really think we are missing one player that's been really, really underrated over the past few years, and he's not very he's not a crowd favorite in Argentina. But I think he's gonna be missed, and he would have been my pick to replace Jonas on Wednesday. And that man is Esteban Cambiaso. I think he's having a great season for Inter. And I was surprised for him being left out of this squad by Diego. I think he would have been the guy to rely on with Jonas not ready to go or suspended. But if I have to pick from what we have available, well, I'm going with Lucho. I'm sorry to disappoint you. I really love the way Di Maria plays. I think he's a little bit selfish, and he could he should pass the ball around a little more. He reminds me of Ryan Babel from the Netherlands and also Arjen Robben, also from Holland. And those are not the my favorite kind of players. I wouldn't start Di Maria instead of Lucho. And especially because Lucho is more experienced, he could help a little bit more on defense. I would keep Di Maria on the bench and perhaps use him in the second half, especially if we are winning. I think Di Maria is a player that thrives when the team is winning, and he has more space to run at. But let's talk a little bit about the team in general. It is believed that Diego will change from the 3-4-3 formation to a more traditional 4-4-2. And so one of the three little guys will have to wait on the bench. Messi will of course start, but who's going to be sitting on the bench? Will it be Carlitos Tevez or will it be Kun Agüero? My pick is for Tevez to start and Agüero wait on the bench. But I don't know about you guys. I mean, based on what we saw on Saturday, I will think we all agree it has to be Tevez.
For me, it's literally Tevez by a mile. I'm not sure what John thinks about this, but for me, it's definitely Tevez.
Well, if I had my pick for the upfront players, I would prefer to have Messi maybe being partnered with the likes of Milito or Lisandro. But I got a feeling it's going to be most likely Messi and Agüero up front.
Just to touch on some latest news, Diego Milito and Ezequiel Lavezzi will not be ready to play. They're both injured. They will make the trip to Bolivia with the team, just to be with the team, but they will not see any action whatsoever. And it's a shame because you miss some options for Diego to play around on the attack. So the strikers or forwards that we have at our disposal that are ready to play are going to be the three little guys plus Lisandro Lopez, if I'm not wrong. Maybe there's another one that I'm missing, but I think we have those four to play up front with Lavezzi and Diego Milito injured. So let's talk a little bit about the defense, Dave. We are switching from three at the back to a more traditional four, and the chances are that Diego is going to repeat the defense he played on the friendly matches in Scotland and France. That is Zanetti as a right back, Papa as a left back, and the duo of De Michelis back from suspension and Gabriel Heinze in the middle of defense. What is your take on that defense? Will they struggle against Bolivia?
I don't think they'll have a problem with Bolivia. The elevation may set in and cause fatigue quicker, but you saw them perform well against France, and Papa especially is going to be under pressure, but when he handled Ribéry pretty well after settling in against the France friendly. Demi Chalice is always solid in the back. In his performance against France, everyone saw how solid he was. And same with Heinze, even though he has those questionable moves every once in a while, but he plays a lot better in the central defense where he has more roaming space instead of out on the left when he's restricted to one side. And we all know Zanetti's always solid. So I don't think they'll have any problem with Bolivia at all, and it'll be good to see Demi Chalice back there. What's your feeling about the defense, John?
I'm really going to say that Papa is going to start on the left, and probably Zanetti might be on the right, and with Samuel and Di Michelis in center back.
I don't know about Samuel. I mean, that, and I was discussing this with Roy the other day, and I think there are two reasons why Samuel might still have to wait on the bench. One is that Diego was quite confident with the four defenders he played in the European friendlies. They are yet to concede a goal, so Diego is relying on the on giving these guys some confidence. And the other reason, which is probably more important, is that Samuel is not at the top of his fitness. So he's coming back from a minor injury, so I don't think Diego will risk it, having in mind the first reason I was mentioning. So I would be really surprised if Samuel starts in as a center back. I think this is more a wishful thinking from you, to see Samuel instead of Heinze, and I have to say that I agree with that wishful thinking, but the reality shows that it will probably be the same four that play against Scotland and France. But let's talk a little bit more about the history of this matchup against Bolivia, and for that we will rely on some statistics that Roy will provide us. And a lot has been said about the altitude and the problems playing with altitude. And Diego Maradona himself was one supporter of the Bolivian cause when FIFA was planning to stop games from being played at a certain altitude. And Diego went there, played a friendly match, hang out with Bolivian president Evo Morales, and now his first really tough test will come in the altitude. There's a thing with the altitude. It's been looked at with a feeling of fear in the past. I mean, teams were going there thinking that, okay, if we lose only 2-3-0, it's okay for us because it's impossible to play up there. And that feeling has changed over the years, and especially with Diego supporting the Bolivian cause. And I have to say that I agree. I mean, national teams should be allowed to play in whatever conditions they experience at their own turf, and the visiting teams should adapt to that. And whether it's altitude, whether it's extreme cold or extreme heat, that's the beauty of the international game, to be played in every condition and in every surface and in every geography. So but over the last few years, I think that fear turned into respect. Everybody respects the altitude, but it's not like in the past. And for that, I'm gonna tell a little story of something that actually happened, and it was in 1973. Argentina were coming from the disappointment of missing out in the World Cup qualifiers for Mexico 1970. And so they wanted to avoid another disaster like that, and they wanted to go to Germany in 1974. So for that reason, Mr. Sivori, the great Juventus legend and River Plate legend, he was the manager, and he had this idea of preparing a squad of players just for the altitude. Argentina had to play Paraguay and Bolivia in the World Cup qualifiers that were not playing in the same format that they are today. They were different groups, and there was a draw to determine which group were you in, and Argentina had to play Bolivia and Paraguay. Argentina had defeated Bolivia 4-0, but then to go to La Paz, they trained a team specifically to play in the altitude. This was 1973, and the AFA sent, the AFA sent these players with a lot of time in advance to adapt to the conditions of La Paz. And that team was known as the Ghost Team because nobody knew who the players were. And among those players were some real talent that perhaps never made it at the international stage, such as Ricardo Bocini, a legendary playmaker, Ala Riquelme, that used to play for Independiente. And a certain Mario Kempes made his debut in that game in La Paz, and Argentina won in the altitude for the first time. And it was 1-0 with a goal from Ayala, not Roberto, but the legendary Atletico Madrid forward that was the only goal scorer, and Argentina won 1-0, and in the end, we qualified for 1974, where another disaster happened, but that's another story. So ever since there, ever since that occasion, Argentina has lost the fear to the altitude and has performed quite acceptable in the altitude. So I expect the quality of the team to be able to overcome the adverse conditions of the altitude. It's going to be up to the players and how can they react to these conditions. And for that, I have to ask you, Roy, is there any player in our current national team that has an experience of playing Bolivia in the altitude for the World Cup qualifiers?
As a matter of fact, yes, and that would be Maxi Rodriguez. Rodriguez was the only player still on the team to play against Bolivia, where we went 2-1. That match was nearly 4 years ago. It was Argentina defeated Bolivia 2-1, and that was on March 26, 2005. So Maxi Rodriguez does have some experience. But that's about it. You know, that's one match only. So he has to get used to it again. Well, just because you play there once every 4 years doesn't mean you're automatically used to it. But you know what? Like he said, the respect is there. It really is. If you watch the Ecuador Brazil match yesterday, Brazil had to respect Ecuador. Ecuador kept coming at him and cut. In the end, had no response and they drew 1-1. But as to your original question, yes, only Max Rodriguez has played in altitude before against Bolivia.
Okay, Dave, I'm not sure if you can still hang around a little bit more. I knew you had some things to do.
Yeah, actually, I gotta head out right now. But I just want to thank you guys for letting me come on the podcast. And quality as usual. And I look forward to seeing Argentina beat Bolivia, and hopefully the positive play that they've been holding on to against Venezuela as well carry over and not be too highly affected by the elevation. And like Roy was talking about before, they have all the confidence right now, and they're not, I don't think they're over arrogant or over confident right now, but undefeated with Maradona as coach, and this will be Maradona's second actually competitive fixture. So hopefully they'll continue their confident run and stay undefeated under Maradona. And I look forward to seeing Gago come out and play this game. He was a little quiet in the last game, but he ended up picking up his play towards the end of the second half. But I'd like to see more out of him in this upcoming Bolivia game. So I guess that's a player for me to watch. But thanks again for letting me come on here, and I look forward to enjoying the match on Wednesday. Thanks a lot.
I guess I'm speaking for the rest. For the rest of the team, it was a great addition to have you on our podcast, and we hope to have you back in the future.
Thanks a lot, guys. This is a pleasure.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about how the standings are looking and how the other teams are performing. And I was surprised that Ecuador didn't win that game against Brazil. I had the opportunity to watch it, and even though some Brazilian players were saying they had to use oxygen tanks whenever they could to recover from the altitude, and have in mind that the altitude in Quito is not as high as in Bolivia. So we're up for a real challenge when it comes to the altitude. But the real thing is that I think Ecuador are much better than Bolivia. And not only they can play in the altitude, they can play whenever they go. And they have some quality players, especially up front. But they couldn't find a way to break down Julio Cesar, one of the best goalkeepers in the world right now. And yes, some might say, okay, Brazil must be disappointed because they lost, they dropped a couple of points in the last action of the game. But I think, to be honest, they were incredibly lucky to go 1-0 up. And and they were lucky in general to come out of Quito with 1 point. So the thing is, whilst Maradona is getting all the love from Argentina, from the media, and from the the fans in general, Dunga is getting all the hate. And how do you see Brazil playing in recent times, and especially under Dunga, John?
Well, I can understand where the Brazilians are coming from. I mean, they are not used to seeing probably Dunga's defensive style of game. But they should look on the positive side that they came away from Ecuador with a point. Because if I can recall, in the last World Cup qualifiers for the 2006 World Cup, the main reason Ecuador made it to Germany is because of the strength of their home record, which speaks very loud. And, you know, if I was being an Argentina fan, if our team went there, came away with a point, I would be glad. It's something better than nothing.
And did you see the game, Roy? Did you have the opportunity to watch it?
Yeah, actually, I watched several matches this weekend, but that was definitely one of them. And let me tell you, those who did not watch the match, Ecuador was extremely, extremely unlucky not to walk away with a full 3 points. They had Brazil on their backs, and it was, you know, it was Julio Cesar who pretty much saved Brazil, but in the end, that's part of the game, and that's why you need a good goalkeeper. It's not going to be easy for Brazil. You know, it really won't. These qualifiers, as much as people tend to think, oh, you know what, it's Venezuela, we're going to get 3 points, or oh, it's Peru, we're going to get 3 points, or whoever it is, it's not easy, especially if you're playing at altitude. And if you watch Brazil recently, they've really been hit or miss. I mean, they drew with Bolivia at home 0-0, and then they go on to beat Italy a few weeks ago. I think it was 3-1 or 3-0. And now they go to Bolivia, and they don't do anything. And that's something that Dunga really has to do. And that's not to say that Brazil don't have the talent. They definitely have the talent. I mean, they were only missing Kaká, who didn't play against Ecuador. And if I'm not mistaken, he will be back for the next game against Peru. And Dunga has to change something, or else his job is going to be on the line if Brazil do not get 3 points from Peru.
Well, I let me tell you this. Dunga will not change. It's the way he sees football. Is the way he likes football to be played. I was having a look at the game, and the first thing I thought was, okay, Brazil playing in blue. This is unusual. It's not that you see it all the time. And then I saw four defenders, and then I saw three defensive midfielders, and I said, is this really Brazil, or is it Italy? I mean, they were playing Catenaccio style all the time, and I was thinking, okay, they have gone 1-0 up, and it was a great goal by Julio Baptista, and it was the first ball that Julio Baptista touched right after he replaced Ronaldinho. But my initial thought was, all the fans in Brazil are really, really sad because their team is not playing the attractive style that they always did. And they're winning, so they won't be happy to accept that Dunga is playing ugly but winning. So my feeling is that a lot of Brazilians were I wouldn't say happy, but somewhat relieved when Ecuador managed to get the draw, because that would put some pressure on Dunga, and I know for a fact that the majority of the Brazilian supporters, they want Dunga out. So Dunga is going to be under a lot of pressure on Wednesday when they face Peru, because if they don't get the 3 points, just take a look at the matches that are coming up for Brazil. They had to go to Montevideo to play Uruguay. Never an easy game for them. Then they host Paraguay, and then they come to Buenos Aires. This series of three matches after the Peru one are going to be make or break for Brazil, and especially for Dunga. But in the end, I reckon they will find a way to qualify. They never missed the World Cup, and I don't think they will miss it. And personally, I wouldn't like to see a World Cup without Brazil.
personally, I would like to see a World Cup without Brazil. But no, that's just the Argentina and me talking. Obviously, a World Cup without Brazil, it's definitely different. But yeah, if Brazil do not get the 3 points against Peru, Dunga is definitely going to be in trouble, because if you watch Brazil, the only time they've ever played well, aside from the Italy match, was, you know, maybe the match where they defeated Chile and the Olympics. And the Olympics, we all know how that turned out, you know. So hopefully there's another repeat in the books in Buenos Aires in September. But that's the problem with Brazil. It's Dunga, like you said, he's not going to change. And it's up to the Brazilian FA to, you know, to make the decision. Do they keep him or do they get rid of him before the World Cup?
And John, what do you think? Let's talk a little bit about the standings. We are sitting in second place, four points behind Paraguay, the leaders. But we are in company of a team that hasn't been around in the conversation in the World Cup qualifiers lately. And I'm talking about Chile. Are you surprised by Marcelo Bielsa's team's position in the standings?
Well, first thing, when was the last time Chile was in the World Cup? Was it like 11 years ago? And
well, I think it was in for they definitely played in France 98, yeah, with Salas and Zamorano. They missed out on 2002 and 2006.
Yeah, so that was the last time they were there. And a lot of things have changed, you know. Some of the big names that you just have mentioned have all gone, and pretty much it's a new team, some of which I'm still not quite familiar with. So yeah, I'm a bit surprised they are there. But then again, let's not forget the fact that they did beat us the last time we played against them. So good for them, you know.
And I've seen parts of the game yesterday, on Sunday. And this is a thing I'm seeing in Chile that I didn't see in the past. They are playing their game anywhere they go. They had a heavy defeat at home against Brazil. But other than that, they're going places, and they also have a heavy defeat at home against Paraguay. They lost 3-0 both to Paraguay and Brazil. But then they go to places like Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia. They won in the altitude 2-0. They got a draw away to Uruguay. So they're playing offensive football the way Bielsa likes to play, and they're playing unselfish football. They're passing the ball around. They're pressing the opposition way upfield, and that's paying its dividends for them. And I definitely think they look quite in a position to make it to the next World Cup, because coming up they have four games at home. To Uruguay, to Bolivia, Venezuela, and Ecuador. They are favorites to win all four. And then they have dangerous visits to Paraguay, Brazil, and Colombia. But if they win those 12 points that are stake at home, I definitely think they're going to be among the four qualified teams for South Africa.
I mean, if you look at their coach, Bielsa, we know his record in qualifiers. It's fantastic. He's a great tactician. And if you look at Chile's results, it's either hit or miss. They either win by two goals or lose by four. They've not been very consistent, and that's really, I guess, my big problem with them, is that they'll win one match 4-0 and then lose the next one 1-0. So there's no consistency there. But I definitely think they will make the World Cup, and that's going to be another story. But consistency is the problem with them.
Yeah, well, the thing, I think the bottom line is that they're not afraid to go and play. Even if they lose, and they could lose heavily, as we said, with Brazil, Paraguay. Even when they came to Argentina, they lost 2-0. But they're going they're going anywhere, and they play their game. Either they win or they lose. They're not afraid as they were in the past. Maybe they were just sitting back, being happy with the point. They go for the 3 points, and quite often they get them. So big kudos to Bielsa and the way he's playing with the way he's making Chile play. They all love Bielsa in Chile, and that has to be for something. And let me tell you, it's not an easy thing to be Argentine and to be loving Chile. So some recognition for his hard work. And then we have quite a battle when it comes to the fifth spot. At the moment, Uruguay are ahead of the opposition for that fifth spot, and that's another team that I think is looking quite good to make it to South Africa next year. What is your take on Uruguay and their position in the standings, John?
Well, it looks to me it's a real tough fight there, but I kind of think that Uruguay may have what it takes to occupy the fifth spot. And by the way, is the fifth spot is an automatic berth, or is it the playoff spot with CONCACAF?
Yeah, they have to play the fourth team from CONCACAF. If the qualification campaign would finish today, Uruguay will play El Salvador home and away to determine who's going to go to South Africa. And one thing about Uruguay that I'm noticing, they are the team with more goals scored in the region in the qualifying campaign. They had 21 goals, and Paraguay have 18. Argentina and Chile both are on 17. But I think the goal scoring ability for Uruguay will be a key to see off competition, especially from Colombia. Colombia have only scored 6, and they are the lowest scoring team together with Peru, and Peru are bottom of the standings. So my bet is on Uruguay to make it, but the dark horse could be Ecuador.
Yeah, Ecuador definitely is the dark horse there.
Ecuador is going to come down to the next match. If they lose if they don't get the full 3 points against Paraguay, then I think Ecuador is done. There's no way they're going to catch up to Uruguay or Colombia for that matter. And to get back on Uruguay for a second, they have two players with 5 goals, and you know, one player with 4 goals. So they definitely know how to, you know, they know how to score, but their defense is so and so. I mean, you know, they've allowed 10 goals, which isn't too bad. But the thing about them, again, is the same thing as Chile: inconsistency. They started off the campaign, they beat Bolivia 5-0, and then the next match they lose to Paraguay 1-0. So there's definitely some issues there. I don't know if they still have to face Colombia. I didn't check that yet. If they do, then that's probably going to be the decisive match. If not, my money's on Uruguay.
So let's play a little game, guys. Let's do some I know the score for the next round of matches. So Venezuela at home to Colombia. Well, I think this is a tricky fixture because, of course, the rivalry they have, their neighbors in the north of South America, and Venezuela has been making some progress, and somehow I see this as a draw. With the inability that Colombia have shown to score as of late, except for the 2 goals they scored against Bolivia, but they're struggling in that department, and Venezuela, they're stronger at home than they are on the road, so I see a draw, a nail biting draw in that one. What's your take, Roy?
I have to disagree on that one. I think Colombia is going to take it maybe 2-0 or 1-0, but I definitely see them taking it. Colombia just lost 4-0 to Chile. There's no way they're going to drop any more points. And I don't care if they're playing home or away. Venezuela has a relatively young squad of 7 or 8 of those players on the team right now, played in the under-20. And I can't see them getting through Colombia. Colombia is going to be a tough opposition. Again, I don't care if they're playing home or away. Colombia for me, 2-0.
All right, John?
I'm going to pick on Colombia, probably 1-0.
Okay, so if anybody is listening to this and have some money to bet, go and put your money on Venezuela, because none of us have picked Venezuela. So, you know, you'll probably go that way. So,
if that's the case, we'll all pick Bolivia instead of Argentina.
Oh, no. That's a different story. When it comes to Argentina, it's a different story. We know our stuff when it comes to Argentina. And that's why, and I'm going to pick this with my heart. I mean, it's impossible to go otherwise. And but other than that, my brain also says Argentina to beat Bolivia. I'm not gonna go with a big win. It could be, but I'm thinking probably 2-0 with Messi scoring one, and the other one coming from Maxi Rodriguez. So it's 2-0 for me, Messi and Maxi Rodriguez the scorers.
I'm going to agree with you, but I'm going to change the score a little bit. I'm going to say 2-1 for Argentina. With Heinze in defense, there's no way. Like, we're going to concede sooner or later. And for me, this is a match where our defense finally gets cracked. But I think our attacking prowess will overcome their defensive prowess. And Argentina 2-1 for me.
Okay, my pick on this game. John. Yep, my pick on this game. I mean, even though it's all about the altitude, but regardless, whatever situation it is, I think Argentina has a lot more quality to offer compared to Bolivia. So I'm going to go for a 2-0 win. Messi and maybe coming from the bench, Carlos Tevez.
Nice. So another game in the altitude, this time in Quito. Ecuador will host Paraguay. And I'm going to pick a home win. Ecuador will be... they played at home. On Sunday, they're gonna play again at home. They don't have to travel. They won't be as tired as Paraguay, and Paraguay have to deal with the altitude, and they're coming from a defeat at Uruguay. So I'm gonna say, and for Ecuador, this game is much more important than for Paraguay. If they lose, they will still be top of the standings, no matter what Argentina or Chile do. So. This is going to be Ecuador all the way for me. They win 2-1, I will say, and they will keep the pressure on Uruguay and Colombia for the fifth spot.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Ecuador, like you said, they played at home. They're well rested, well as rested as you can be without the traveling. Paraguay is starting to look a little flat. I mean, I watched the match versus Uruguay, and their defense, their midfield, their attack, they had nothing going for them. I'm going to go with Ecuador on this one, and I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the next round, Paraguay is down to second or even third, because the wheels are beginning to fall off over there.
All right, my pick, Ecuador 1-0.
That's it.
Oof.
Yep.
A man with few words, but with a lot of knowledge. All right.
Yeah.
We will see. We'll see how we done with our forecast. So next game, this is probably the most attractive game of all in this coming round of fixtures, because two teams that have won their last match and are pretty much in contention to get to the World Cup are going to be playing in Santiago, where Chile will be hosting Uruguay. And for me, as much as I would like Uruguay to make it to the next World Cup, and I think this is a crucial game for them, I'm not seeing, I don't see a way for them to get a win in Chile. And to me, Bielsa will win another tactical battle, and they will keep, he will keep their, his high flying Chile side. Up there in the standing. So it's going to be a home win. I'm thinking 3-2, a high-scoring game. I'm thinking 3-2 for Chile.
I'm close enough for me, but I'm going to say 3-3. I'm going to say it's going to be a draw. Chile, again, they do very well, but then the next match, not so well. Uruguay, I think they tired themselves out a bit against Paraguay. I see a draw or, you know, at the very least, maybe a 3-2 win, like you said, for Chile, but my gut instincts tell me it's going to be a draw, 2-2 or 3-3.
Well, I suppose that Chile is a very tough team to beat at home, but I'm going to be adventurous here. I would like to see Uruguay do us a favor. Just get Chile off our backs. That's it. I'm not so sure what the scoreline is going to be, but I want Chile off our backs. That's it.
All right. Some people say it's not important whether you finish first, second, third, or fourth. The important thing is to be in the top four and qualify. But I'm thinking John wants that number one spot in the standings. I don't know why, but
it's good to be number one.
That's the way it goes with him.
It's always good to be number one.
I know, it's something I'm not used to, being a Racing Club supporter in Argentina. I'm not used to that, but it's okay. I guess I have to respect that. And finally, the last game in Porto Alegre, in the south of Brazil, Brazil will host Peru. So I don't think Brazil will get an easier fixture than to face the bottom of the standings at home. But Brazil have been playing better away from home, and they feel the pressure of their supporters. Their last two home games were against Colombia and Bolivia, and those ended up in disappointing 0-0 results. So for sure it's going to be very nervy for Brazil, especially if they don't open the scoring in the first 15 or 20 minutes. But I don't see a way for Peru to get anything from Brazil. It's gonna be a 2-0 win for Brazil, and they'll continue on their way to South Africa, even though they're not playing beautifully or anything. So it's 2-0 for me for Brazil.
Yeah, well, I think we all agree on this. Brazil is probably gonna win it, but I see this being a difficult match. I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park, as some Brazilian fans think. I'm going to go with 1-0 Brazil, or maximum 2-0. I'm not sure if they'll have Qatar or not. Even if they don't, they should easily see off Peru. Both corn, Brazil, but 1-0.
Okay, I'm definitely going to agree with you guys. You know, I think it's hard to imagine Brazil not winning this game. So it's Brazil 2-0 for me. By the way, Seba, I just need to ask you one question about Peru. What's going on with them? I mean, they have it's not like they don't have players, but what is the problem with their national team?
Well, you know, there have been problems with the government getting involved with the running of the Peruvian Football Association, and there's been history of Peruvian players going partying on the eve of a important match, and disciplinary measures were taken against players like Farfan and Pizarro, and they were suspended to play for the national team. And I don't know if they're still suspended. I will have to check that. But the loser in the end is Peruvian football. Even when they have quality players such as Norberto Solano and the aforementioned Farfan and Pizarro, their defense is all over the place. They have conceded 23 goals. That's a huge amount of goals, and it all gone wrong for Peru. I think there's only one thing that's uglier than the Peruvian defense, and that's Dunga's clothes. Every time he's on the bench, his color combination is, it's nothing short of dreadful, and that's the thing, the only thing that we can forecast for sure, that Dunga is going to be dressed horribly.
Maybe that's what's distracting the Brazilian players.
I guess Dunga is trying to relieve the summer of love.
All right, and with that friendly banter on Dunga, we recap the second edition of our podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sure I did, and we'll have another edition right after the game against Bolivia. So we hope more readers are listening to this, and we really hope you liked it.
Yeah, thank you again, Perseva and John, for giving me the opportunity to work on Mundo Albiceleste and being on the podcast. Again, thank you for everyone, and I hope you guys enjoyed it.
John, a quick reminder of our email address, so where people can send everything that goes through their mind.
Yeah, the email address is argentina.correspondent@gmail.com. Again, argentina.correspondent@gmail.com. Please keep the mails coming in. We definitely want to hear more from you guys.
All right, that's all for us right now, and a big vamos Argentina for Wednesday.